This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, in for Terry Gross. On today's archive edition, an interview Terry recorded with actor Christopher Walken. After his early roles in the film Next Stop Greenwich Village and Annie Hall, Walken won an Academy Award for his portrait of a self-destructing Vietnam veteran in The Deer Hunter. Since then, he's appeared in over 90 films. Right now, you can see him opposite Denzel Washington in the film Man on Fire. Next week, he'll appear as the lizardly suburban husband Mike Wellington in the remake of The Stepford Wives. Walken started his acting career as a child, but as an adult, he's played many characters you might not want your child to see, characters that are both menacing and oddly funny. On screen, his voice can be creepy or captivating, but always fun to hear. His eccentric line readings are tempting to imitate, which is what Kevin Spacey did on Saturday Night Live, imagining what it would sound like if Christopher Walken had tried out for the part of Han Solo in Star Wars.
Okay, Chris, whenever you're ready.
I'm captain of the Millennium Falcon. Chewie here tells me you're looking for passage to the Alderaan system.
Yes, indeed, if it's a fast ship.
Fast ship? You've never heard of the Millennium Falcon. It's the ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. She's fast enough for you, old man. That sucked. I'm sorry. I need a minute.
Did you hear this impression when it was broadcast?
Yes, I did. He's a friend of mine. He does it in front of me.
Really? Does it make you self-conscious?
No, I guess I'm flattered, you know, to have that. It's never seemed to me that I spoke in an odd way, but I guess I do.
So you're not consciously trying to put the accents on surprising words?
No, I think that's I have my own way of punctuating things, and I think that's really more than it is. It's not so much the way I speak as the rhythm of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true. I have my own punctuation.
What do you mean by that? Do you like repunctuate a script when you get it?
I tend to ignore punctuation, actually. It's not that I do anything different. I just take it away. And then when I read things, I try to have them begin and end more or less where they do in my mind, as opposed to, you know, being told where that happens. It's kind of more interesting to figure it out yourself.
So do you think when you take away your punctuation in a script and say things in an unusual way, do you think it ends up maybe sounding more impromptu that way?
Well, it sounds more like me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think that's true. And scripts can very often be filled, I mean, not only over-punctuated by, you know, somebody wanting to make sure that it's spoken exactly the way they had in mind. But very often scripts are full of what they call stage directions, which not only tell you what it is you're saying and how to punctuate it, but it'll, you know, it'll have a line and it'll say in parentheses above it, he says despairingly, you know. Whenever I see that, I cross it out. Or if I see despairing, then I read the line happily or...
let me play another scene from one of your movies, and this is King of New York. And this is, I think, more typical of the kind of role that you get where you're the heavy of one sort or another. And in this, you're a drug dealer who's just come out of prison. And to let everyone know you're back, you stop in on some of the competition and tell them that you want a piece of the business.
From here on, nothing goes down unless I'm involved. No blackjack, no dope deals, no nothing. A nickel bag gets sold in the park. I want in. You guys got fat while everybody starved on the street. It's my turn.
You think you're gonna live long enough to spend that money, you f***ing hump?
If any of you are tired of getting ripped off by guys like that, you come with me. I'm at the Plaza Hotel. You're welcome. You're welcome! Enjoy.
In that movie, you play the kind of character who can be pretty sadistic and is like amused by his own sadism, which is the kind of character you've played. And your characters all have this great verbal flair. I guess that's part of good writing for any movie. But I'm wondering where this kind of character starts with you, where your understanding of this kind of character comes from.
I don't know. I think if you get a kind of a ball rolling, and whatever it is, whether you're the funny guy or the romantic guy or the villain or whatever, if you're lucky enough to get that going, you could end up being asked to play that sort of person a lot. I think it's just an economic fact of life in the movies. Then occasionally you get lucky and get something else, something different. I've gotten to do a few musicals, so I've gotten to do different things, but it's true that I early on started playing, strange or villainous people.
Were there people who you observed as a child who seemed strange and villainous or who seemed particularly unhealthy or morally bankrupt who interested you and you observed?
No. And I can't think of people like that. But somebody suggested to me that it started with Annie Hall. It's one of the first things that I did. It's a great movie, and it's one of the first movies I did, and a lot of people saw it. And it was a wonderful movie. But I played, essentially a suicidal character, a guy who wants to drive his car into traffic. And it's an interesting idea that maybe that's how I got on that oddball foot, you know.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that role. We happen to have a clip standing by. and this is one of Woody Allen's early movies. He plays a young aspiring stand-up comic. Diane Keaton plays, and he's like the Jewish neurotic urban guy. Diane Keaton plays the neurotic goyish Midwesterner. And in this scene, Woody Allen's visiting her family home in the Midwest. At night, he passes you in your bedroom, and you make this confession to him.
Can I confess something? I tell you this because, as an artist, I think you'll understand. Sometimes when I'm driving on the road at night, I see two headlights coming toward me. Fast, I have this sudden impulse to turn the wheel quickly, head on into the oncoming car. I can anticipate the explosion, the sound of shattering glass, the flames rising out of the flowing gasoline.
Right. Well, I have to go now, Dwayne, because I'm due back on the planet Earth.
And of course, in the next scene, it's pouring out and you're driving a very frightened Woody Allen to the airport. It's funny, your lines on that about imagining driving into an oncoming car. I bet a lot of people have imagined that for split seconds in cars.
Poor Dwayne. it's that, it's that crazy thing where you anticipate annihilation for a second. It's better not to dwell on that sort of thing.
You've said that you grew up on the planet show business. You started in show business as a child. What were you, like 3 years old or something?
Well, real young. My brothers and I were in the show business at that time. And that was the birth, really, of network television. And it all happened in New York City, in and around Rockefeller Center. And they used a lot of kids, particularly at holiday time. I couldn't say that we were actors, but we were there. We were performers. In fact, when I do Saturday Night Live now, I had spent a great deal of time on that floor of NBC, the eighth floor. As a kid, I know all the nooks and crannies there. And I know that area very well. And a lot of those shows came from within 5 blocks of Rockefeller Center.
You know, I think many of us grew up with the idea that stage mothers are like the mother in Gypsy, where it's like a woman who's really kind of controlling and possessive and manipulative, who really wanted to be in show business herself and couldn't do it, so she's living her show business life through her children. Would your mother have fit that image at all?
Well, I think my mother definitely had a passion for show business, but it wasn't, as I say, such an unusual thing for kids to go to dancing school and then get on the subway and go to New York and be an extra on some TV show. And I remember that the kids at those days, one wanted to be what they called a triple threat. That meant you could sing, you could dance, you could remember your lines. And people who could do that stood a better chance of getting the job than the other guy. And the pay wasn't much, but it was a lot of fun. And there were a lot of people who did that, and it was a sort of a community. I'm very grateful to that. It was an education for me that I couldn't possibly have had anywhere else. And in fact, I don't think I'd be an actor today if I hadn't done that as a kid.
Because you went to children's professional school and spent a lot of your time acting professionally, are there parts of what was considered normal children's lives that mystify you, that you were just like not a part of?
Well, it's true. I don't know much about baseball or football, or, you know, I can't hardly swim. The sports thing wasn't that present where I went to school, but I'm not sure it was for anybody who grew up in Manhattan. There's just no room to play football. The closest thing to baseball I remember was a stick ball. You used to play it in the street with a rubber ball and a broom handle. So that part of it was a little different. On the other hand, I can dance. There's a whole generation, I think, of people who grew up in the neighborhood that I grew up in, who are probably about my age now, who can tap dance. Going to tap dance class was not unusual, whereas now it probably is.
You manage to get little dance moves sometimes into your movies, like...
I do. I try to fit in a little bit.
Like when you get out of prison in King of New York and you meet up with your boys again, you do, I don't know what the move would be called, but you do a few seconds of a little dance.
Yes. I've been told, you know, in fact, it's true that there's almost always a little dance I sneak in. I don't do it consciously, but it does end up being there.
Yeah, sometimes it looks like you're about to go into your dance, just into a dance, just when you're standing and about to...
Well, maybe I did, and they cut it. You know.
Right. Let me play another scene. This is a scene from the movie The Comfort of Strangers, which was written and directed by Paul Schrader, who also wrote Taxi Driver. And in this movie, you play an Italian who takes two English tourists under your wing and then uses them in your sadistic sex life. Early on, they can tell there's something not quite right with you, but they're nice people, and they don't want to jump to conclusions. So when you invite them to your house, they kind of show up in a state of confusion. The man, played by Rupert Everett, is with you in the room that used to be your father's study when he was a diplomat, and you start to tell him about your father. In fact, all of your stories in this movie seem to start with the words, "My father." Let's hear this scene.
My father and his father understood themselves clearly. They were men, and they were proud of their sex. Women understood them too. Now, women treat men like children because they can't take them seriously, but men, like my father, my grandfather, women took very seriously. There was no uncertainty, no confusion.
So... this is a museum dedicated to the good old days.
Well, after you punch Rupert Everett in the stomach for no particular reason, then you wink at him. Was that wink in the script, or was that just a little Christopher Walken thing?
That was just one of those winks.
All your big stories in this movie start with "My Father," and your first "My Father" story is, I think, about 6 or 7 minutes long.
Yes, that was an enormous speech. It's a wonderful script written by taken from the Ian McEwan's book, but adapted by Harold Pinter, and the dialogue has a wonderful feeling to it. It's certainly a strange character I was playing, a disturbing sort of fellow.
Yeah, I think you once said that you found this character the most disturbing of all the characters that you've played.
I think that's true. I don't take things home with me that much. But he was I was glad to get rid of him.
What was particularly disturbing about this character?
Well, he was just so twisted.
Having grown up in show business, do you think that having an acting career means something different for you than it would to, say, someone who grew up in a small town and dreamed someday of getting to Broadway or of someday making it to Hollywood? Because you kind of grew up with all of this.
Yeah, I think that my feeling about it always was and still is. I'm not as comfortable with the word actor as I am with the word performer. I've always thought of myself as a performer. If I'm a good actor, that's kind of a bonus. But being a performer has always been more or less how I think of what I do.
Well, Christopher Walken, before you have to leave, I want to end with a clip, and I was hoping you could tell us about making the scene. And this is from a movie called At Close Range, in which you play a kind of small-time criminal. Your son is Sean Penn. You turn on your sons. You shoot Sean Penn's, your own son's girlfriend. You kill her. You're a really heartless guy in this. And by the end of the movie, Sean Penn is so upset at all the treacherous acts you've committed against your own family that he's holding a gun on you, his father. And he's so upset, he might really shoot you, and you're not sure how to play it. Before we hear that scene, tell us a little bit about what went into the making of this scene and what it's like for you, as someone who doesn't really like guns, to be in front of a gun on a movie set.
Yes, well, this story is based on a real family, and it's a terrible, sad story. When we shot this scene, I think I know what you're referring to. I've said it before, but I had a gun pointed at me, and at one point they switched the guns, and that was enough to put me in a panic. I didn't know really what was going on, although everything was being kept very safe behind my back. Just being in the dark about it got me into a huge anxiety attack. Anyway, that on film, you can see that. That's about all I can tell you.
And the other thing I like about the scene is that you're a character who's so incapable of being sincere. I mean, you're trying so hard to say to your son, I love you, and it just won't come out in a sincere way at all.
Yeah, well, I tried to be sincere.
Tried and failed, though, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. That's in character.
Exactly. Christopher Walken, it's been a real pleasure. Good luck with your new film, and please make a musical one day.
Thank you, and it's always a pleasure to listen to NPR.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that.
And your program.
Is the gun you used to kill Terry?
I never did nothing to Terry.
Whoa! Whoa! Wait! Is this the gun you used on everybody, on me? Family gun, Dad.
Jesus. Put that down. I've seen you.
You're gonna die. I know one thing clearer than I've ever known anything in my entire life, except that I loved Terry before you killed her. And that is that you're gonna die.
You got the guts to kill me? I'm your blood. I'm your family.
You're not my family, not anymore.
Yeah, you're crazy. Crazy, gone crazy.
Nope.
Listen! Listen! What?
I know how it is. Cops got you in there, get your head all f***ed up. I know how that is.
My mind's simple, Dad.
Before they got you twisted, you must have known something. You must have felt it. I gave you money. I gave you a car. I took you in. But don't that mean something?
Means what? Means what?
It means I got feeling for you.
What feeling?
I care. What do you... I love you. What? Is that what you want to hear? I love you.
Yeah.
Mother...
I love you too, Dad.
Christopher Walken with Sean Penn in a scene from the film At Close Range. He spoke with Terry Gross in 2000. Walken's newest film, a remake of The Stepford Wives, opens next week.